Guys, it is December already, and I don't know about you, but I'm freezing.
Yeah.
It is so cold.
Your AC is so high.
It got down to 62 today.
Yeah,
62.
I was so excited.
So cold. Yes. You know what? It is.
Is the season.
It is beginning to look a lot like Christmas, which Zach reminds me.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go, take a look at the 5 and 10. It's glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes that glow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. A pair of hop-along boots and a pistol that shoots is the wish of Barney and Ben. Dolls that'll talk and they'll go for a walk is the hope of Janice and Jen. And Mom and Dad can hardly wait for school to start again. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go, there's a tree in the Grand Hotel and one in the park as well. It's the sturdy kind that doesn't mind the snow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Soon the bells will start, and the thing that'll make them ring is the carol that you'll sing right within your heart.
Is it snowing?
No.
Oh my gosh.
I don't believe it is.
No.
Not at all.
No. That's right, we're in Florida.
Yes, yes. But I'll tell you, it is beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Oh.
Yep.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front.
Sure, that would get me excommunicated from Vista, but you guys seem to like it for some reason. But it's been fun for us, and I hope it's fun for you as well. Every Christmas, our family pulls out the pre-lit Christmas tree from the attic and sets it up to the tunes of something of a tradition. I don't know if you've got a traditional song or album that you listen to when you're putting up the Christmas tree, but growing up, Kara's family always listened to the same record. I'm not trying to be a hipster. She actually listened to a record every Christmas, year after year. Our family, we grew up putting up the Christmas tree to Kenny G, and so the saxophone songs and sounds of Christmas were traditional for us. And our kids, on the other hand, are growing up to the sounds and the songs of Michael Bublé and Pentatonix. But many years ago, in fact, over 150 years ago, there's a poet by the name of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, arguably one of the most influential writers in American history, wrote one of the most famous poems in American history on Paul Revere's ride. But Longfellow wrote a Christmas carol that maybe many of you know, maybe many of you have sang traditionally, even while you're putting up the Christmas tree. The Christmas carol known as I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. Maybe you've even sung this, but if you haven't, if you're not familiar with the song goes like this, and I won't sing it for you. You're welcome. But it goes like this. I heard the bells on Christmas Day, their old familiar carols play. Wild and sweet, the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Now, you may know that tune, you may know that Christmas carol, but what you may not know is that there are actually six stanzas to this Christmas carol. However, when Longfellow published this carol, the publisher actually removed half of the song for one reason. In this season of Longfellow's life, it was 1861 when Longfellow lost his wife tragically in a house fire. The same year, in 1861, the Civil War started here in America, and his oldest son went to be a soldier in the Civil War and tragically was killed in battle. So this year for Longfellow was an incredibly tragic, dark, difficult season, and yet it was in this season, in 1863, that Longfellow penned the Christmas carol, I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. And he wrote the poem and the stanzas that were cut out by the publisher and subsequently cut out in most of our singing of this Christmas carol. It goes like this, Longfellow wrote, "Then from each black and accursed mouth, the cannon thundered in the south with the sound the carols drowned of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and it mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill towards men." Turns out Longfellow didn't like the sound of those bells, at least by stanza four. Many of you may be thinking, wow, Brandon, it's Christmas time. Why did you take this dark turn at the very beginning of your message this morning? Well, it's really simple. Because while many of us may not be having the Christmas that Longfellow had, we no doubt have difficulties, even during the time of year where there's peace on earth, goodwill toward men. We may not be having that experience that Longfellow had, but we still have difficult days. We still have difficult seasons, even in the time when it should be a season of hope and peace. And yet, that's a good thing, because it forces us, it pushes us, it challenges us to wrestle with the question of, is hope real on Christmas? Because we can be tempted to just go through the Christmas season and sing all of the sweet songs, put up all of the great decorations, walk through this season of hope, but yet personally be struggling internally and individually with, where's the hope for me this Christmas? The season and the time of year that's filled with wonder, that's filled with joy, may not be that for each and every one of us this morning. Last week, we kicked off our series, Christmas at Vista, talking about the reality that we're all in a season of waiting. We all, in one way or another, are waiting. And as we wait, and in our waiting, we wait with a great longing, as all of those of us with a pulse do. And in that longing, we're longing for hope, but at the same time, wondering if there's really any hope in Christmas at all. There's joy all around, there's songs, there's carols, there's smiles all around, and yet within, there's difficulty, there's pain, there's trauma, there's darkness, there's depression all around, and it has become a reality for us. And so we wait. But where do we wait? Last week, we talked about how we all are waiting, but in our waiting, God is working. No doubt. We've seen God working not only in the past where we see the stories of God at work, but we see God in the waiting even in our own lives today. We see God is at work and that God has a purpose in our waiting. That while it may seem like God is not working, while it may feel like God isn't even present, God in fact indeed is working in our waiting. But it leads us to a natural question. Well, where is God in our waiting? Where do we wait in our season of waiting? Which leads us this morning to a familiar passage that you may have heard. You may have even sung about. In Isaiah chapter 7, we read the prophet Isaiah speaking on behalf of God when he says in Isaiah 7 verse 14, "Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son and shall call his name Emmanuel," which we talked about last week, is God with us. We have a with us God. Jump over to chapter 9, verse 2. "The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shone." Verse 6, "For to us a child is born. To us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." Now, this may be a passage or a verse that you've heard before. It may be something you've even sung before, but maybe you have no familiarity at all with it. But this is a verse promising the Messiah, the rescuer, the one who God has promised for decades, for generations. And we've known this passage as a passage of promise of who God will send. But what I want us to do is really just take a few steps back from this prophecy, from this promise, so that we can get some of the context of what was happening around when this promise was made. And we don't do that just to unpack all of the boring parts of the story of Christmas because we've got nothing else to talk about. My hope is, as we unpack the context of what was happening in this day, it can speak into the context of what's happening in our own day. It can speak into and maybe even bring some clarity into the circumstances of our own life. So let's take a few steps back in this familiar verse to unpack what may be unfamiliar in the context around it. So Isaiah chapter 7, let's buckle in, let's dig in. And look at Isaiah 7, verse 1. "In the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, son of Uzziah, king of Judah, Rezin, the king of Syria and Pekah, came, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, the king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to wage war against it, but couldn't yet mount an attack against it. When the house of David was told, 'Syria is in league with Ephraim,' the heart of Ahaz and the heart of his people shook as the trees of the forest shake before the wind." Now, there's a lot to unpack here, a lot of context that we're not going to get into. But what we need to know is that the king over Judah, the king of God's people in this point in history in the Old Testament, gets a word that the neighboring nations around are plotting and planning war against them. They are planning an attack. They are planning to take over, and they are planning to rule what was God's people. And then if you notice there in verse 2, when the people, when the king heard what was being planned and what was coming and what was happening, it says that they shook. The heart of God's people shook in fear. So context here, what we need to know and what we need to understand is that there was political instability everywhere in the land. This was really happening. Political instability was a real thing in this day. But not only that, when all of the instability showed up, then the people shook in fear. So there was political instability and widespread anxiety. Imagine that. I know it may be a stretch to imagine political instability and widespread anxiety in a day and age like ours, but no, God was not prophesying in our day. He was prophesying in that day, which shows you and I that we can grasp some context here of what's happening in our day, because this is nothing new that we're experiencing. Verse 3, "And the Lord said to Isaiah, 'Go out and meet Ahaz, you and Shear-Jashubab, your son.'" So this is bring your child to work day for the prophet Isaiah. "And say to him," the king, "'Be careful, be quiet, do not fear, and do not let your heart be faint because of these two smoldering stumps of firebrands at the fierce anger of Rezin and Syria and the son of Remaliah.'" Isaiah shows up speaking on behalf of God, comes to the king, King Ahaz, and says, Be quiet, be calm, and don't be afraid. Now, why would Isaiah say that to the king? Well, we need a little bit of context here, because we know we've experienced, whether it's been in our own heart and mind or in the heart and mind of people that we love or do life with, that it's not as simple as just saying, don't fear. It's not as easy as just saying, be calm, when there are very real anxieties going on in our heart and in our life. So why in the world would Isaiah, speaking on behalf of God, say, don't be afraid? Well, here's why. Verse 7, thus says the Lord God, it shall not stand. It shall not come to pass, for the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. And within 65 years, Ephraim will be shattered from being a people. And the head of Ephraim is Samaria. And the head of Samaria is the son of Remaliah. If you are not firm in faith, you will not be firm at all. Why would the prophet Isaiah say to the king, don't be afraid, be calm, be quiet, don't worry about things? Why? Because God is promising what you're worried about will not come to pass. What you're stressed about, King Ahaz, will not actually happen. Now, how many times do you and I stress and worry about things that don't ever come to happen? How often do you and I stress and worry and carry deep anxiety about hypothetical situations? I went to the dentist a couple of years ago. I've been to the dentist since then. I go regularly, thank you very much. But I went a couple of years ago, and when I got into the dentist, they did the checkup, they did all the cleaning, and he said, Brandon, do you know that you grind your teeth? Do you know that you've ground your teeth so much so that you've ground it down and removed some of the protective enamel that's on there? I'm like, well, no, what do I need to do? And he said, well, I thought I'll just get some mouthwash, everything will be fine. And he's like, well, there's nothing you can really do, because you've ground your teeth likely because of stress. And in that stress, you've ground your teeth to a point that it's caused very real damage. See, there are moments in our life when we carry stress, when we carry anxiety, when we carry fear, hypothetical or not, that causes real damage. The stress we carry, the brokenness we hang on to carries real weight in our life and hurts your very real spouse or your very real kids, or you lose very real sleep because of the stress, hypothetical or not. And so God in this moment speaks to King Ahaz through the prophet Isaiah to say, be calm, don't be worried, be quiet, don't be afraid. Why? Because the thing that you're worried about isn't actually going to happen. In fact, God goes a step further and gives Isaiah a sign in chapter 7, verse 14. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. He'll show you, he'll prove it to you that this is not going to come to pass. The sign is this: behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son and shall call his name Emmanuel. Now, we know the final story here. We've read in the New Testament, we've heard the story that there's a reason for the Christmas season. We can fast forward to the Gospels, but they couldn't. And so happening all around them is all of this political instability, widespread anxiety. God says, don't be afraid. And then he says, it's not going to happen. What you're worried about is not actually going to come to pass. And so this is your sign. Behold, a virgin will conceive and give birth to a child. You don't have to be afraid. And now we move through the story and see the context, and we can know what happens. But let's look at verse 16. For before the boy knows how to refuse evil and choose good, the land whose two kings you dread will be deserted. Did you catch what the prophet is saying in this moment? Don't be afraid. Why? Because what you fear won't come to pass. We talked about this last week in our waiting. God sees where we're at right now, but he also sees the end of everything and knows the purpose that he has for our life. And so in this moment, as he speaks, he says, before a child even knows the difference between good and evil, what you fear isn't even going to happen. You see, in this moment, Isaiah is teaching this very simple, simple thing that oftentimes we run into, that becomes a speed bump for us. He was saying to King Ahaz, you're trusting in something else instead of trusting in God. Because Isaiah says, the thing that you're afraid of isn't going to happen. The thing that you're trusting in, see, Ahaz would soon come to trust in Assyria so much so that he would forget the promise of God. He would forget what God told him would happen. And he would instead come up with a peace treaty with Assyria. Instead of trusting what God had promised. And God says, look, they are going to come in and take everything. In verses 18 through 20, Isaiah says, the Assyrians are going to swarm in. They are going to take everything. And then Isaiah says this, they're going to take a razor and shave off your head, shave off your beard, shave even the hair off of your feet. Which in that day was a sign of dishonor. So here's the deal. Here's the point. Here's what you and I can extrapolate. For you and I, our greatest problems often don't come from the things that we fear. They come from the things that we trust in. And if we put our trust in anything other than the ultimate, it will not help us. It will only hurt us. God reminds Ahaz and his own people that, look, you're going to look to Assyria rather than looking to me. But Assyria can't help you. In fact, all they can do is hurt you. And it's the same with us. As we're waiting on God to give us peace, many of us in our fear, while we're waiting, we look to other things for comfort. We run to other things for hope. And I'm telling you, those things will not help us. They'll only hurt us. Because if we put our ultimate hope in anything other than what's ultimate, it will not help us. It'll only hurt us. For many people, politics has become their new religion. Oh, if we can just get this next person in office, it may be every 2 years, it may be every 4 years, it may be every 6 years. But we think and we put our hope, well, that person, if we can get them in office, then it'll change everything. But has that ever worked? Have politicians ever made things more peaceful? Just look around. There's more anxiety, there's more anger, there's more attack because politics is not solving our greatest needs. And I'm not downplaying the fact that we need political leaders, but I am saying if you've fixed your hope there, I've watched anger boil over in the streets. It does not work, which means for you and for me, as we're waiting, as we look to the where we are waiting, there's a couple of things, a couple of choices we can make. Number one, we are either going to be shaky in fear, like Ahaz, or we're going to be stable in faith. And as we're waiting, if we get shaky in fear, we're going to run to things like politics. Maybe for you, it's not politics. Maybe you're not a political thinker. Maybe for some of you, it's technology. We've looked to and we've thought that technology would be our saving grace. Oh, how much time will be saved through the conveniences of technology. And yet, what happens? Well, our time-saving technologies now absorb our time. This flow of information from technology hasn't made us more informed. It's made us more anxious. It hasn't helped us. It's hurt us. Why? Because when we look to find ultimate hope and things that aren't ultimate, they don't help us, they hurt us. Maybe for some, this morning, it's not in technology or in politics, it's come through money. Oh, if I could just earn enough, if we could just be debt-free, if we could just live not beyond our means, But friends, I'm telling you, I've seen it time and time again. Where you build the wealth, people have built empires and companies, they've risen to the top, they've achieved everything they've wanted to achieve professionally, and then the carpet and the rug is pulled out from under them, the empire crashes, they lose everything, their home, their boat, their jet skis, their vacation home, their retirement, everything comes crumbling down, and then they're led to the brink of suicide. Why? Because the thing they put their hope in that's not ultimate didn't help them. For some, it hasn't been money or technology. It's been fame or to be known by someone or be recognized for something. Madonna did an interview for Vanity Fair, and she said this about her own life. She said, "I have an iron will, but my will has always been to conquer a horrible feeling of inadequacy." Madonna, pop superstar. She goes on to say, "My drive in life is from this horrible fear I have of being mediocre. It's always pushing me. Even though I've become somebody, I've got to prove that I am somebody. The struggle never ends, and it probably never will." Maybe for some of you, you thought, well, if I can just get to this position, if I can just achieve this, if I can just arrive here, then I'll be fine. Madonna goes on to say, as soon as you become somebody, now you're afraid of losing being somebody, and there's no peace there. For others of us, we look to other non-ultimate things to bring us hope, like addiction. Maybe for some of you, you've constantly looked to different addictions that you've had. And for some this morning, the addiction is alcohol. And you've constantly run back to the bottle, and I'll just open the bottle at night. And what you have found is what the great philosopher Johnny Cash said. You start drinking the bottle, and then the bottle starts drinking you. Maybe it's not alcohol, maybe it's running back to the internet and all of the online traps that are there. Maybe it's not alcohol or internet, maybe for you it's back to the store so that you can buy and purchase your way out of the problems that are in your life. But here's the deal. As we're waiting on God, as we're waiting for a breakthrough, we will either shake in fear or we'll stand in faith. And if we shake in fear, we see it in the story of Ahaz. You'll go to non-ultimate things to give you ultimate hope. And if you put your ultimate hope anywhere besides what's ultimate, it will not help you. It will only hurt you. So that should lead to the natural question, well, where is God in this? Where is God in the Christmas story that we're talking about? Where is God in the context of what was happening with his people? Which leads you to ask, where is God in the context and the details of my own life? The story goes on in chapter 8, verse 5. The Lord spoke again because this people has refused the waters of Shiloah that flow gently, also known as because people have refused to listen to what God says, because they haven't chosen to trust God. They've left the peaceful, calm waters of Shiloah, and look what happens. And they rejoice over Rezin and the son of Remaliah. Therefore, behold, the Lord is bringing up against them the waters of the river, mighty and many, the king of Assyria and all his glory. And these floodwaters will rise over all its channels and go over all its banks. And it'll sweep into Judah, and it'll overflow and pass on, reaching even to their neck. And its outspread wings will fill the breadth of your land, O Emmanuel. God says, because they chose not to trust me, because they chose not to follow my promise, my story, my purpose for their life, they left the calm and peaceful waters for the raging river rapids. And it comes and it flows everywhere and it wreaks havoc, but it comes up to their neck and it stops. It stretches out its wings but has no bite. Why? Because of Emmanuel, God with us. It's interesting that Isaiah says you put your hopes in something else, but in the end it hurts you. But God rules the nations, stops the havoc, prevents the chaos. And then he says God will accomplish his purpose. Every army will shatter in its place. And then he says this in verse 9 of chapter 8. Be broken, you peoples, and be shattered. Give ear, all you far countries. Strap on your armor and be shattered. Strap on your armor and be shattered. Take counsel together, but it'll come to nothing. Speak a word, but it will not stand, for God is with us. For the Lord spoke to me with his strong hand upon me and warned me not to walk in the way of this people, saying, don't call conspiracy all that this people calls conspiracy. Don't fear what they fear, nor be in dread. But the Lord of hosts, him shall you honor as holy. Let him be your fear. Let him be your dread. Verse 14, and he will become a sanctuary and a stone of offense and a rock of stumbling to both houses of Israel, a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many shall stumble on it. They shall fall and be broken. They shall be snared and taken. There's a lot there. But here God shows us the second thing in our waiting. The second thing as we're waiting, the choice that we have, the first choice being that we can either wait shaking in fear or wait standing in faith. It depends on where you set your hope. The second is this. It's how you relate to God. The second is this. God will either be a sanctuary to you or a stumbling block for you. Isaiah talks about it in terms of this rock, this stone, this stumbling block. It can either be a stone that is a solid foundation for us, or it's a stumbling block to us. Imagine I'm walking down the street and there's a stone in the middle of the street and I see it, but I deny that it's there. Does my denying it change the fact that that stone is there? No, I'm going to trip over it as I walk. This is what Isaiah is saying. Either God is going to be a sanctuary of safety for you, or he's going to be a stumbling block for you. And you have a choice. You can trust that God is working even when you don't see he's working. You can choose to believe that his hand is not idly twitching, but rather busy working for us. Or you can deny him when life doesn't work the way that you expected, when the cookie doesn't crumble the way that you were hoping. You can get angry and frustrated, but here's the thing. If you don't believe in God, it doesn't make God go away. If you deny God's existence, it doesn't make him stop existing. He says you've got to decide on that anxious day. Where will you wait? If you wait trusting in God, you'll have peace even in an uncertain day. But if you get angry at God, vengeful at God, forget about God, God's still real and will become that stumbling block to you. This is something that Napoleon, the great warrior leader, discovered. On the eve of the battle at Waterloo, he gathers all of his generals together and says, okay, guys, I want this battle to be over early, so let's start early so that we can take care of all of these guys by 2:00 tomorrow afternoon. After the meeting, one of the generals comes to him and he says, Napoleon, remember that man proposes, but God disposes. It's just a riff off of the truth in Proverbs 16. And so Napoleon brings this general who worked for him. He brings him in and he says, I want you to understand, sir, that Napoleon proposes and God disposes. AKA, Napoleon's calling the shots. It's said in history books that not long after he said that, the rain started to fall. And all of those cannons that were going to win the battle for Napoleon all got stuck and sunk in the mud. Napoleon and his army were destroyed that day. It was so embarrassing for Napoleon and all of his warriors that they actually exiled Napoleon to an island where he spent the rest of his days studying and learning about the God that he denied his entire life. There's a man named Matthew Paris. Matthew Paris wrote an article in the Times for the UK, and his article was entitled, "As an Atheist, I Truly Believe Africa Needs God." And he tells about his experience of going back to his home country of Malawi. And he saw the wells that were being dug to provide fresh water for all of the people that he grew up with. As he saw these wells being dug, he said, "It renewed my faith in developmental charities." But he said, as he traveled throughout Malawi, it refreshed another belief in him too. One belief that he'd been trying to banish his entire life. Now a confirmed atheist, he says, quote, "I've become convinced of the enormous contribution that Christian evangelism makes in Africa, sharply distinct from the work of secular NGOs. Those works will not be enough. Education will not be enough to change Malawi," he says. "In Africa, Christianity changes people's hearts and brings about spiritual transformation. This rebirth that he saw is the real change." And he admits he tried every way he could to explain it away. It's their physical relieving of the suffering. It's just that they brought clean water. But he said the facts don't support that, because he watched as people's hearts were changed by Jesus. He watched as lives and generations were changed. He watched as the very culture and fabric of Malawi changed. And he said, quote, "I'm trying my best to deny Christ, but I can't deny his power to stabilize the human heart." Where are you waiting this morning? Are you waiting shaky? Do you deny God and put your faith somewhere else? I'm telling you, church family, that something else, that someone else will not help you. It will only hurt you. Are you trusting God in the waiting? Or are you running to some other comfort that you hope will numb temporarily what you're experiencing? God can help stabilize you in your anxious day. We need him. We need a refuge in times of trouble. And Isaiah, as he continues to speak to the people, he notices that people are turning to spirituality, which may be something that you've wondered. Maybe I just need to get more spiritual in my life. And maybe I just need to add some sayings or some quotes or a religious rabbit's foot. But Isaiah says that when you look to spiritual answers instead of looking to God who has the answers, you're just going to come up empty. So as instability is happening all around us, maybe as instability is happening all within you, you begin to wonder, is Christmas just a bunch of sweet sayings? Or is there something I can hang my hope on in Christmas that will bring real hope? Well, here's how God answers. In Isaiah 9, verse 6, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. And the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace, there will be no end. The peace that God brings doesn't end. On the throne of David and over his kingdom to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore." Not only for the context we read in Isaiah, but for our own context in life today. "The zeal of the Lord of hosts will accomplish this." So how does God speak into the chaos of our world? The endless wars, the anger, the anxiety that we feel? It comes with the gentleness of a child. And that child is God with us, that we saw in Isaiah 7, that Matthew saw in real life and wrote about that real life of Jesus. An actual virgin had an actual child that brings us actual peace. God has sent us a wonderful counselor. Listen, you need better advice than any of us can give you. And we have a counselor who is wonderful. You need a mighty God who is stronger and bigger than your problems in life, who can stop the raging seas of Assyria, who can unravel you from the addictions that you're suffering in now and can change your story in a moment. You need a mighty God, and he has come. You need an everlasting Father. Your problems, your pains are temporary, but your longings are eternal. You need a God who is eternal too. You need a Prince of Peace who reigns with peace in a world of problems. Yes, we live in a difficult day, but we can be a hope-filled people. We love the story of the Grinch, a story that Dr. Seuss wrote, a story that Dr. Seuss told, that's now been told through books, through movies, through live-action musicals. And it's a story of a Grinch who hated Christmas because he thought Christmas was just all about the presents and the decorations. And so he swept it all away. But the Whos of Whoville were a hope-filled people who sang anyway, who sang in the darkness, who sang when there were no presents and when there were no lights. And when the Grinch saw this, his heart, which was three sizes too small, grew and grew and grew. Though this Christmas for you may not be a fun-filled Christmas, while you may be walking through very real stresses in your life, while you may be experiencing things that you hoped you'd never have to experience, while you may be more alone and more isolated this Christmas than ever before, Christmas is about a God with us, wherever you're at, for us and with us. Let's pray. Father, we are blown away that you chose to come to a world, that you made promises in the midst of a world of political instability and widespread anxiety. God, in our moment of instability, in our moments of overwhelming anxiety and fear, we can't look to anyone else or anything else but you. God, I pray that you would remove and just strip away those addictions that we've held on to in hopes that they would fulfill a promise that you said would only be fulfilled in Jesus. God, I pray that we would stop looking to people, stop looking to possession, stop looking to power or position to find our hope, but that we would look to you and find the one and only true hope. God, if there are those this morning who've been denying you, I pray that you would become a sanctuary of safety for them, that they would no longer stumble over the rock in front of them, but they would be stable in who you are and in what you've done. God, we know that there's stability. We know there's peace. And we know these things because of Jesus. And it's in his name that we pray. Amen.